Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Wellness Ultimatum Radio Show. I am your host, Omar Cumberbatch, and today we have an excellent show about dating. This is a hot topic. You don't understand how much buzz that I've been getting about this particular topic. I have Facebook questions, and thank you for everybody posting Facebook questions and actually private messaging me, trying to give me some common questions that people want and about dating tips and relationship advice, and I'm really excited about our guest today. Our guest today is Dr. Gregory Canillis. Dr. Gregory Canillis currently teaches in the clinical psychology doctoral program at the Chicago School of Professional Psychology. His clinical work, research, and teaching have focused on the entire range of relationship issues from trauma, abuse, and infidelity to conflict resolution, spirituality, and self-esteem. He is also the author of two upcoming books, the first titled Sticks and Stones, Healing from Verbal Abuse, and Cheaters, Recovery from Infidelity. Doctor, I would like to welcome you to the show. How are you today?
I'm good, Omar. How are you?
Doing well, doing well. Yeah. I'm very happy to have you on the show.
Thank you.
I don't know if you caught the... Great. I don't know if you caught the introduction, but this has been a hot topic. It's generating a lot of buzz, and I really appreciate you coming on to share your tips, because everybody needs help in relationships and dating nowadays. It's a different world than a lot of us grew up with.
I would agree. Yeah, I did see some of the questions on Facebook, and so I know it's kind of a hot topic for your listeners, and I'm excited to be here.
Yes, I appreciate it. Well, why don't you tell us a little bit about your journey? How did you get into the field of psychology and, you know, all the upcoming books and everything, and just a little bit about yourself.
Okay. So I went to the University of California, Santa Cruz, and as an undergraduate, I majored in psychology and American history. And as an undergrad, I decided I wanted to do a little bit more, wanted to work with people, particularly families and children. One of my areas of specialization is also ethnic minority mental health. Ethnic minorities tend to underutilize mental health, so I was very interested in doing research on those populations as well as working with them clinically. So I went to graduate school, finished a PhD, and worked for several years providing direct services. I also have some experience teaching and administration. I've been teaching probably about 15 or 16 years now and teach classes on domestic violence, couples therapy. I'm actually teaching a couples therapy class a little bit later. And so that's kind of how I've come to where I am today.
Awesome. Just like you mentioned in your bio, I mean, definitely well-versed in this relationship game, so I'm definitely excited to hear some of your tips. And I don't know, you know, you're out on the West Coast, so it's like beautiful weather all the time. And for us back here in New York, it's probably been the worst winter, at least I've ever seen. And when you go out now, it's like everybody's now out trying to mingle and try to meet that mate and try to find, someone to really spend the rest of their lives with. Like, share a couple of, you know, your ideas as far as, like, you know, even just a general tip on, like, what is, like, something that people should be looking out for? Maybe with potential, you know, red flags or possible problems with a potential boyfriend or girlfriend.
So some red flags that I've discovered in my work with couples and individuals who are dating, and then also from the research, is things like poor romantic relationship history. So if they've had, you know, relationships that were not good and they're telling you that on the first date or second date, that probably is a red flag. Some of the other things are like poor relationships with parents, clinginess, neediness, not being very responsible. So if there's a history of, like, not working, not, you know, doing stuff that will provide for them, that's also something. A history of infidelity, even when they give you explanations. And that's one of, you mentioned that that's one of the books that I'm currently in the process of finishing. And so I found out a lot of stuff about infidelity. And so if people have a history of cheating, they're more likely to cheat again. So if they tell you that, that's a major red flag. And then, you know, who they hang around. You know, there's an old saying, birds of a feather flock together. So if you're telling you sometimes about friends who have kind of unscrupulous behavior, like they're cheaters or they're liars, that probably is a red flag as well. And then one of the last things is like quick attachment. So if people are really, at the beginning of the relationship, really trying to move too fast, a lot of times that's a bad sign. Quick attachments, in my experience, also equal like quick detachment. So the quicker they, you know, want to get together, a lot of times that relationship ends fairly quickly.
That's very interesting because, this could get a little muddy because I'm just the first one that you threw out there, you know, the four romantic relationships. Now, you know, in theory, like as you meet a new person, you probably failed in all your relationships prior to some extent. Is there something that is a red flag in that red flag as far as being having a poor romantic relationship history?
That's a good question. So, a lot of times people have had previous relationships. They're not necessarily poor romantic relationships. It might be that they learned something from the relationship and that they just weren't compatible. They might be better friends. It might not be that one or both of them did anything wrong. But what I'm talking about when I say poor romantic relationship history is like history of abuse, verbal, physical, that kind of thing. You know, mentioned to you that they're kind of jealous, that they, you know, stalked, you know, an ex. Those kinds of things are actually pretty bad and red flags that sometimes people miss, or they hear it, but they try to excuse it, or they believe the excuse that the person that they're dating is telling them.
Not that a great, great point. Yeah, that definitely makes it a little more clear, and it makes it very obvious, you know, especially like you said, the stalkings, and it's like you have to run away when people start admitting that they're stalking other people. You know, that's just got to be a red flag off the bat. I like that point about the parents too, like in their relationships with their parents. If they have bad relations with their parents, it could be a big red flag as well.
Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense too.
Yeah, so people are telling you that they don't get along well with their parents. That is a really big red flag. You know, people tell you, I haven't talked to my parents in like 5 years, or I'm estranged from my parents. A lot of times that can be indicative of something deeper. It may be that they didn't have a good relationship when that person was growing up. And, you know, our parents are the first people that love us. And if there isn't that kind of attachment there, we find in like the psychological literature and work with clients that I've worked with, that can be a real negative for somebody that's coming into a relationship.
So no, that's a great point.
Loved by your parents, it's harder for you to receive love and to give it.
Excellent point. And I just want to touch on one more red flag because I think this is actually something someone who asked me this in a roundabout way the other day, the not working and not responsible component of it. Why is that a red flag?
Well, if you're building a relationship and you want to, you know, go out, do things like that, if somebody's not working, that can put a stress and strain on the relationship. So in terms of couples therapy, the three biggest issues that couples come in for usually have to do with, you want to guess? You want to take a guess?
Money.
Right.
Sure.
Money. You're not working. Not working. That's going to be a stressor. Number two.
Yes.
Sex.
I would say, that's what I was going to say. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And then
the
third one.
Got to be trust.
Linked to the third one. So the third one's communication. So poor communication can be linked to trust. But those are the three biggest things that people come in for. So if you're not working, you're not responsible, you're not taking care of business, so to speak, that can be a strain. And that, you know, when people are dating, they want to do stuff in the beginning. I mean, that's the whole part of, you know, dating. And then you want to be able to go places and have fun. And that, unfortunately, most times costs money. And so if the person's not, you know, working regularly, that can be a red flag that there are going to be some problems down the line.
That definitely makes a lot of sense. Definitely makes a lot of sense. So I'm going to flip it around. What are some good qualities to look for in a potential mate?
Some good qualities. Let's see. That is a good question. So one of the biggest things that we find is compatibility. A lot of times people, when they first meet somebody, they're looking at the exterior. You know, she's fine, or, you know, he's fine. But passion fades. You know, we as we get older, you don't look the same. You know, the body isn't necessarily the same. So the things that you have to look for that will sustain a relationship are things like compatibility. Like, do you like to be with this person? If you don't like to be with this person, that probably isn't like the right person for you to pick. You know, but a lot of times people will miss that because they're so focused on, like, the passion and all that. And that's great, but it doesn't always last.
Right.
I talk to people, I tell people to think about, like, you know, friendships. Maybe if you've not been in a long-term relationship, you might have a friendship that's lasted for 10 years or more. And, you know, those relationships change over time. You don't spend the same amount of time with the person. You don't have, like, the same passion for the person. It may be that you hung out quite a bit when you were younger, but as you age and you have other responsibilities, et cetera, you don't really connect in the same way. So that passion kind of fades, and it's the same way with, like, romantic relationships. That passion fades, but you have to be friends. You have to be compatible in order for it to last.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. I agree 100% with that.
Some of the other things are, like, honesty, trustworthiness, kindness, empathy. Does that person have empathy for you, their partner? How they treat other people? Are they nice to their family, their friends? Do they, you know, how do they interact with, like, service personnel, like waiters and waitresses? Are they rude? Sense of humor. So I know most people have heard, like, laughter is the best medicine, and having a good sense of humor has lots of, like, mental health benefits. If you have a good sense of humor, you can get through a lot of life's challenges. And so having a partner that's able to do that, too, is a plus. And then forgiveness. And how attentive is that person? Is that person always on social media? And, you know, are they, like, constantly on Facebook or Instagram trying to get likes and not paying attention to you? Those are things that I think are really good qualities to look for in a mate.
Makes a lot of sense, definitely. Very, very interesting stuff. I wanted to touch on an issue that you had discussed with me off the record. How much of a role does the idea of family of origin issues play in mate selection? And I guess if you can, you could describe that idea to the audience, you know, about parents modeling in terms of their own romantic relationships.
So it plays a really big role in choosing partners. And it's not always something that people think about consciously. It's sometimes happening unconsciously. But what was modeled for you oftentimes is what people tend to play out in their own romantic relationships, as well as, you know, relationships with their kids. So if parents modeled good relationships, they were affectionate, they, you know, were basically a team, then that's probably what you or the potential partner are going to do in your own relationship. If that was not present, or kids didn't get to see that necessarily, like a parent was absent, an absent father, absent mother, or maybe they grew up in foster care and they were bounced from place to place, oftentimes they didn't have that model. And it's not that you can't move past that, but it's something that people that didn't have that model for them have to spend more time working through. And then attached, if you, again, if you don't feel really close to a parent, you don't feel like they were there, that makes it very difficult for people to accept love and to give love. And, you know, that's the basis of any romantic relationship, dating or marriage.
Okay, I got you, I got you. So that even explains why you tend, is it an issue of comfort? Is it just something that you're used to? Or is it something that you know, unconsciously seek out?
I think it's both. I think you hit the nail on the head. I think it's both. It's something that's comfortable for people. People like to stay in their comfort zone for the most part. And so they really, to stretch takes a lot. And so it's comfortable. It's something that you know. But it's also something I think for a lot of people is unconscious. They're just doing it. They don't really know that they're doing it until they enter therapy or they're having conversations like this and they have like a light bulb moment and it clicks for them. So I think it's both of those things.
Yeah, because it's really interesting that that component comes up, because then now, you know, my head's spinning right now with all these different ideas. And is that possibly a reason why people are drawn to the red flags of, you know, relationships? Is it because maybe in their own household they've experienced the, you know, the parents who are maybe clingy or someone who's not responsible, and they kind of look that out in their own relationships going forward?
Absolutely. So we attract what we are and what we're comfortable with.
Mm-hmm.
So if attracting the same thing over and over and over again, then you have to stop and look at why that is. And oftentimes it's because, again, stuff that you probably witnessed growing up. Again, it might not be conscious stuff, but you're acting out what you probably saw model. And, you know, and it's something that can be changed, but most people aren't really conscious of it. They're just doing what they know, what they're comfortable with.
Gotcha. So I'm going to play the doctor for 30 seconds, and I'm just going to tell the audience, if they're listening, maybe, you know, just look at why you keep attracting the same types of people, because when we go into our Facebook questions, you're going to hear this as a, like a recurring theme a little bit, and everyone says, I can't find this kind of person. I keep attracting this kind of girl or this kind of guy. And maybe they got to take a step back and see, you know, what in their history make them actually attracted to it in an unconscious way. So
yeah.
I'm going to put back, I'm going to give it back to the doctor on that. That's my like PhD moment for 30 seconds. So.
All right. Yeah, you summed it up. That's a good PhD moment.
Thank you.
Okay.
But yeah, I think it's very interesting, and I've seen it in my own relationships as well. So I definitely can appreciate that, and I think that's some great advice that you're giving. So you know what? Since we just touched on the Facebook questions, I'm just going to jump into some of that stuff, and then we're definitely going to get into the aspects of actually when you're in a relationship and how to improve in the relationships that you are currently in. So we'll get to that towards the end, but. Let me ask you, this is a common theme. Why, after you feel that you have a great time or a great date with somebody and believe that they have, you know, genuine interest in them, do they sometimes not call you back, or they might not respond to you or become really ghost and disappear out of your life? Do you have any theory behind that type of attitude?
Yeah, I mean, I think that could be a number of reasons that people do that. I don't think it is always necessarily a bad thing. Some people just go out on dates as experiments to determine whether they're ready or not. I was talking to a friend about this earlier today, and she was telling me that, you know, sometimes people just go out because they want to eat. You can't believe it. She's like, yeah, girls got to eat.
Oh, yeah, I've been on that end.
Yeah, so it might be that the person just wanted to go out and have a good time and wanted some company, and it has nothing to do with, you know, the other person. It's just that was their motivator. Some people may have just recently gotten out of a relationship or may have other commitments like work. Some people may think they're ready and then find that they have an emotional block when they go out on the date. Or may just not be a good fit, and they just don't want to tell you that. So I think listeners should not take that personally. But when people aren't responsive, you know, you can reach out to them once or twice. If they're not responsive, it's time to move on. It's not worth, like, you know, chasing that person.
I might have to go back to a little bit extra to that question, but I think you just gave me, like, the perfect segue to my next question. It's like, is there any legitimacy to a person, quote unquote, being too busy to get back with, you know, to you or call you back or make time for you? Do you believe that that's accurate in any sense of the imagination, or is that just one of those brushing you off kind of quotes that people use generally?
I think if people aren't responding, if they're not getting back to you, not texting, not calling, emailing, whatever, that means something. So if someone's consistently responding like 8 or 9 hours later or days later or not responding at all, that's not probably because they're busy. That's probably because they're not interested. You know, because people spend time and energy doing things that they want to do. I think that's an excuse. If they want to be with you, they'll be with you. If they want, you know, they want to call you back, they'll call you back. There was something, I have a friend who is really bad about this, and I sent him a little, a screenshot of something that I found on the internet, and it's like a little quote. If you ever think I'm ignoring you, I swear to God I am. My phone is at hand for 7. So, and he has to Instagram, of course, because that's who he is. Has nothing to do with him being that busy. You know, I don't think anybody's that busy. I have like a number of commitments. You mentioned those, and you know, I can always return calls. It's not maybe in that instant or an hour later if I'm engaged or I'm in class or something like that. But definitely by the end of the day, I'm going to return, you know, the call or the message or something like that. I don't think anybody's that busy. I think even Oprah Winfrey would return calls.
Okay. You know, yeah, she has to get with Stephen somehow, right?
Right, exactly. So, yeah, I think that's the excuse. When people tell you that, they just don't want to be bothered. They don't want to connect. A lot of people, though, they don't like to talk on the phone, myself included now. I like to text, but, you know, it's still a form of communication. That's still getting back to you. That's still being in contact. If they're not doing anything, that usually means that they're not interested.
Yeah, no, I definitely hear that. And I think it gets confusing, too, because my next question, of course, leads into another dynamic where the Waters could get money. But I agree with you 100%, just to put out my disclaimer. But one of the common questions has been, is there any legitimacy to playing hard to get? Like, I know that some people just think that this is an effective tactic, and I can make an argument both ways. I just was curious, you know, what are your thoughts on that idea?
Yeah, that's a good question, and I've had that come up when I was working with couples and individuals. I think this is a yes or no, yes and no. I think people, honestly, I think people want things that other people covet. So if you look like you're too available, they oftentimes are not interested. But if you look like you're desirable and people want you, that person, for some reason, is going to be more interested. But I think that's why, like, luxury goods sell, is because, you know, people covet that, and they, you know, everybody can't access it. So if you appear to be somebody that everybody can't access, then people, for some reason, are more interested in you. But no, because it's a game. I'm not really big on games and playing games. I don't think it really is helpful in terms of relationships. I think it's best to be honest and transparent. But that is how I think people think. So some people will lean towards doing that because they want to see if that would make the person more interested in them.
Yeah, no, it's a tough balance. I definitely agree with the point. It's definitely a debate because I hope that a lot of people aren't, you know, playing this hard to get thing by not contacting people and find out that this person is gone because they're playing this game and they really wanted to talk to the person. It can get crazy. The whole dynamic can get a little crazy.
Yeah, definitely. Absolutely. Because they might think the person's not ready to settle down or they're too hard to reach and they give up and they move on. And so, again, that's why I'm not really for, like, playing the games. I'm like, just be transparent. If you like me, you like me. Okay? If you want to be in a relationship, you know, say so. But I do know that a lot of people do that, and that usually I think is why they're doing it.
Yeah. Yeah, this is the games make it a lot more difficult, that's for sure. And a lot of questions came up about, like, being exclusive with the person. So is there a specific time frame that, like, somebody should expect this? Like, so how long might be too long? Say you're dating for 2 years and they're not making that commitment. I'm not talking a marriage commitment. I'm talking about just a relationship where it's exclusive between these two individuals. Like, that, again, that question came up a lot. What is your take on that? And, you know, I was curious about your opinion.
I think that has to do with each couple. I think each couple has to make the decision for themselves about that. And I think it needs to be a mutual decision where both people have some say in that, not one person. You know, I don't want to be in a relationship or I need more time or whatever. 2 years is a long time to date and not be exclusive. But, you know, if that works for the couple, fine. If that's not working for somebody, they need to, you know, voice that. And that they, as a couple or whatever they are calling themselves, need to work that out. But that is some time. There are marriages that have lasted less. So,
absolutely.
That is time. If somebody is dealing with that, you know, I think I would say sit down and have a conversation with the person you're dating, your partner, whomever, and try to work that out. Because usually people know within, like, the first few months if they're interested in that person or not. And so if it's taking that long to commit, there usually are other reasons, and they might be some of the reasons that we talked about earlier.
Mm-hmm. So is it healthy for one person to just desire this relationship, you know, being exclusive and the other not? I mean, how does that cause damage in the relationship?
That doesn't usually work. That's been my experience of my own personal relationships as well as the people that I've worked with in terms of counseling. Individual clients and couples, that doesn't work. Both people need to be in agreement about what's happening. Are you dating? Are you in a relationship? Are you exclusive? Are you not? Because somebody's going to be upset if they're not on the same page. And so, yeah, that never works. I think it has to be a mutual decision. And sometimes it's best to just kind of move on. If it's, you know, the person's feeling like the other one won't commit and it's been a significant amount of time, sometimes it's just time to move on. And sometimes that triggers the commitment in the other person. Not always.
I knew you were going to say that. That's why I kind of jumped in. Like, is that good, though? Like, is that because, okay, now I'm going to leave. Now that's the thing that sets the fire on to the other person? I mean, I know it happens all the time. I'm not trying to debate that part.
Yeah, lots of people I work with.
Yeah,
I mean, it can go either way, though. I mean, so you have to be prepared for both outcomes. You have to be prepared for that person maybe moving on, and you have to be prepared for them maybe getting some clarity, getting some distance, and to getting some clarity and saying, you know what, this is the person that I want to be with, this is the person that I want to commit to, and coming back and making that commitment. But, you know, if you're not happy and you've tried to work through it, sometimes it's best to just move on.
Yeah, I guess, you know, also the threat of that person, you know, leaving and realizing what you had and not going to have it anymore also helps, you know, this. Yeah, it's an interesting dynamic, to say the least. So that's why it's fascinating. And
yeah,
I have another question.
It has to be prepared for both.
I'm sorry?
I said it can go either way, so they have to be prepared for both. Because I've also known couples where it happens and then the other person gets into a relationship with somebody else. And if the person was expecting that it was going to work out the other way, they can be kind of devastated by that. So they have to be prepared for both outcomes.
Makes a lot of sense. Makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Now, I'm just moving on to the next question. And this has to do with the dating world that we live in nowadays anyway. We live in a world that we have tons of options. Is that a good thing or a bad thing, or why?
I don't know that there's a lot of research on this, but in terms of working clinically and just my own thoughts about that, I think it's a bad thing. I think people have right now too many choices, and they're scared to commit, oftentimes because of, like, some of the things that we talked about earlier, like maybe...
Hello? Oh, I think the doctor disconnected. hopefully he calls back in the next couple of minutes, but I know he has everybody at the edge of their seats, so you're going to have to listen to me for a couple of minutes while he reconnects to the show. He should be in here any second. This is such a fascinating topic that we deal with on a regular basis, and like I said, it's a topic tons of email questions and just a phenomenal response to this. I hope that you're enjoying the show so far. Right now, I'm just going to wait for a couple seconds, hopefully, and then the doc can just shoot his way back onto the switchboard, and then we can carry on with the show. We're going to also get into, like I had mentioned earlier, there's a bunch of questions about people who are actually in. Oh, here it goes. Hang on one second. Hey, Doc.
Hey.
Hey. I think you set the switchboard on fire with all your information, and we lost you for a second.
Oh, that's okay. No problem. I think you're asking about options?
Yes.
Okay. So, yeah, I was saying that I don't think it's a good thing. I think people have, you know, too many choices, and it makes them a little scared to commit. And then there's less societal pressure for people to get married or stay in committed relationships like in our grandparents' or great-grandparents' generation. So I don't think it's necessarily the best thing. I think it's helping to make people a little bit more indecisive about committing to relationships.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. Totally agree. I mean, I think, especially hearing from friends myself, I just think that they're always looking for a better thing around the corner. You know, they're just like, it gets too overwhelming. Too many options even in a grocery store is bad to me. So it's not even, you know, with actual people, this gets even crazier.
Yeah.
Nobody's a perfect person either. You know?
Right. But I agree. I hear that quite a bit, you know, in terms of couples, individual clients, friends. I mean, there are just too many options. People don't want to commit because they think that there's going to be something better around the corner, which is just really silly. A lot of times the person that you probably should be with has already presented him or herself. But they're so indecisive, thinking that there's going to be something better, that they miss out on what they could have had.
Listen, Hollywood made $1 billion off that theme right there, you know. They're always the bright one that's sitting in front of you the whole time. So I know it has a lot of legitimacy to it.
Yeah.
Now, I guess, you know, I mean, we could go on this topic for forever because I think they have so many elements and layers to it. But and I know there's people on the line who are actually in relationships right now, and they want advice as well.
Okay.
So, what practical steps that, you know, do you think, actually, you know what, I want to ask you one more question about it because, like I said, this is a great topic. What practical steps that I think, that you can come up with moving forward towards actually finding the right partner? I think we left that component out.
Okay. That's a good question. So I think, as I said earlier, I think we attract people. We attract who we are and who we're comfortable with. So a lot of times it's looking at your own stuff around that. If you're attracting, again, people that aren't the best fit for you, why are you attracting those people? Is it family of origin stuff? Is it your own stuff? Maybe self-esteem issues? Not always bad stuff or stuff that's considered bad, but it's you looking at your own stuff, your own process. Changing your thinking. Sometimes people may feel that they don't deserve the best, and so that's what they do. So sometimes changing the way that they think about things can be really helpful. And, mm-hmm. you know, some people believe in, like, the law of attraction. I think that that's connected to that, how you think about things. So if you are putting out that you want a good partner, a trustworthy partner, an honest partner, somebody who's committed, that is what you will probably draw. So expecting, like, good things to come, that's what you're going to draw to you. I talk to clients, and I share this with students when we're talking about things that you can do with couples. And so creating, like, a vision board, cutting out mm-hmm. pictures, magazines about things that you want, not just material things, but you can do the same thing with a partner. What do you want that partner to look like? What do you want some of the qualities to be? And, you know, if you're thinking about that, then that's what you're going to attract. A lot of times people, it's not clear. They just want, mm-hmm. I want somebody. And that's what you get, somebody.
Right.
Not somebody good, but it's somebody, and because that's what you're yep. looking for. So I think you have to be a little bit more specific and know what you want. You know, if you don't want to do the vision board, I suggest to clients that they write things down, like, these are the qualities that I want. And, you know, I went over earlier some of the qualities I think that are really good qualities for a potential mate, like compatibility and trustworthiness and honesty and all those things. Your list could include those. It might include things that are different. But what do you want from that person? Because that's probably what you're going to draw. Mm-hmm. You know, and then you need to be those things yourself. You know, I think it's Wayne Dyer who says, be what it is that you are seeking. So if you are seeking certain things, then you need to be that as well for the person who's coming, who's going to be coming into your life. And then therapy. I'm a therapist. I'm not, I want to say that I think that that's something that can be really good for some people. Everybody won't do it, I know, because in some communities there's still like a stigma around it. But it can really help to clarify for people what some of the underlying issues are that might be preventing them from being happy in relationships and being happy in, like, other aspects of their life. So for some people that might be good. For other people, they might want to connect to spirituality a little bit more. All those things, I think, are really important in terms of drawing the right person to you.
Mm-hmm.
If you have wounds from the past, unresolved family origin issues, or issues that came up in previous relationships, dealing with those issues can really be important. You know, learning to forgive yourself and forgive others, I think that that can be helpful too. Sometimes people are holding stuff from previous relationships. You know, mm-hmm. they split with their partner. They were really pissed with that person. They're like, mm-hmm. I don't want to ever see that person again. You know, that's fine, but you have to, I think, work through the whole process of forgiving that person and forgiving yourself. Most relationships, even when they're considered quote-unquote bad, had some element of learning to them. You learn something about yourself if you really look deeply. And it may be that you learn this, something that I don't want in the next person. But really forgiving yourself for being in a relationship, for making mistakes if you made those, and moving on. And then, you know, creating balance in your life. I think learning to accept love and give love, those are things that are helpful for you as a person seeking a partner, but it also prepares you to receive a partner.
Right.
And then getting out of your own way. I deal with a lot of people who sabotage their success. They say that they want certain things in terms of their career, in terms of their life, in terms of romantic relationships, but they will do the opposite of those things. They say that they want a committed relationship, but then sometimes they'll choose people who they know can't commit. So if you know that, again, you know the person has a history of infidelity, that probably isn't the best person for you to pick. So getting out of your own way and not sabotaging yourself. Mm-hmm. I think those are things.
Well, that'd be... I was just going to say, I'll let you finish, but then I had a quick follow-up when, you know, you finished your sentence. I'm sorry to cut you off.
Oh, no, you didn't. You're fine.
Oh, okay. I was just going to say, like how important it is, for at least in your opinion, for a person to maybe take some time to be alone and figure some things out on their own without jumping into another relationship, like, before they're ready. How important do you think that is?
That's an excellent question, and I think that that's very important for people to do. I mean, I think you have to heal before you get into another relationship. Oftentimes, though, people don't do that. So if the relationship ends, they start dating immediately. You know, friends will encourage it. Family members will encourage it. They'll set them up on dates, things like that, if they've, you know, gotten out of a relationship or a marriage. And that isn't always the best thing. Sometimes people need to just sit, process what happened, think about what happened in the previous relationship so that they don't make the same mistakes. I think when you jump into things too quickly, you're going to make mistakes again. And so really having that time, taking that time to, you know, work on yourself, to figure out what you want, to maybe, you know, again, write things down or do the vision board, spend some time with yourself is an excellent thing to do. It's not good to jump into something immediately after. But a lot of people don't like being by themselves. They don't want to be alone. That's difficult for them. And so they'll jump into something. And, again, I don't think that that's necessarily the best thing. So a friend of mine says, she said, the quickest way to get over a guy is to get up under another one. And not necessarily literally, but you know, to get somebody in that space again, to have somebody to focus on, and it does maybe shift the focus if you're kind of depressed about the ending of the relationship, the previous relationship, or you're you know, sad or whatever. It may shift that because you're going out and things like that, but it doesn't, I think, help you to work through the issues that maybe cause the end of the relationship or cause you to pick somebody that was not the best person for you. So I think you're absolutely right. I think people need to take a moment and, you know, sit with themselves, sit with what happened, think it through so that they're able to make better decisions the next time somebody comes along.
That makes a lot of sense to me. I guess it's easier said than done for a lot of people. I know that for sure. I think the being alone part is tough for a lot of people, for sure.
Yeah, I agree. And so, you know, people have to work it the best way that they can, but I think for the most part, in an ideal situation, you want to take some time and, you know, rush into something.
All right, so... Now, like I said, the dating thing, we can go on forever, so I'm going to try to take it, you know, down a different road. So, like, if people are in relationships right now, like, what are some things that they can do to strengthen their current relationships?
Well, again, I think really looking at your own stuff can be really important. So, you know, again, healing from your own stuff, looking at unresolved family of origin issues, can be really a good idea. Learning to really explore who you are can impact the current relationship. Learning to be a better communicator. A lot of people come in, when I'm seeing folks in therapy, a lot of them come in, and one of the benefits of therapy that they don't even necessarily come in for is that they learn to communicate better. And so working on communication with your partner, if you're in a relationship, tends to be a good idea. Most of us don't learn how to do that. Again, that's not modeled for most people in their homes. Parents don't necessarily communicate with each other in the most positive ways in some homes. And so learning to do that with your partner, learning to have open, honest conversations about things can really benefit the relationship.
That definitely is interesting. I know we touched on it a little bit earlier about just like the after time, certain things fade. Now, one of the questions that came up, you know, one of the Facebook questions, like, say that you're in a relationship for, you know, over 20 years and you have children together, and, you know, they're getting older, like, when the relationship starts feeling more like you're better off friends than a couple, is there something that can be done in those situations? Like, what is your take on, like, the outcome of this? Because I understand that a lot of people do say things fall off in the romantic sense after time.
Yes.
But, you know, when as they're feeling like friends and stuff like that, or they're better off as friends, Is there a remedy to that, or is there some advice that you can give in that situation?
Yeah, I think that is, I would suggest that couple seek couples counseling. I think probably would benefit from having like a neutral third party weigh in on what's going on with them. Again, a lot of times people get to a certain point in a relationship, friendship, romantic, what have you, and there have been changes over time. And I think that's natural. Relationships change. There's fluidity in all relationships. Even you know, parent-child relationships, those change over time. So I would suggest that they seek out the services of a couple therapists and that they sit down and really talk about what the issues are. It may be that one partner's feeling that way and the other's not. It may be that both of them reach that decision and they really haven't talked it out. And so it might be that they can work through that. It might be that they need, you know, a spark in the relationship. If they've been married for 20 or 25 years, sometimes, like, the passion has faded, and it might be that, you know, going out on date nights or spending time with each other might reignite that spark. It's never the same, I think, as when people first get together, but it could be ignited in a way that, you know, they might rediscover each other. So I think having somebody maybe walk them through that would be a good idea. I think sometimes people feel like they're not being fulfilled, and that stuff can be worked out. I think we give up a little too easy nowadays because, you know, there aren't some of the same cultural norms that existed, like I mentioned earlier, with our grandparents and great-grandparents' generation, where divorce was not always an option. I mean, certainly if you're in an abusive relationship, I think that that's a little bit different. But in lots of relationships now, I think people quit a little bit too easy because they feel like, well, you know, it doesn't matter. You know, people don't care if I'm getting divorced. Society doesn't say anything about it. And they give up too easily when I think things could potentially be fixed.
And right, then, right.
I talk to my students who are training to be MFTs, LCSWs, you know, marriage and family therapists and psychologists when I'm teaching the couples therapy class. And one of the things that I tell them is that every couple that we see is not necessarily going to remain married or remain in a committed relationship. It may be at the end of their time in therapy that they decide that they're not good together and that it's time to move on. And in those cases, I think a therapist can also help you to leave the relationship as friends. And that's especially important. Those partners have kids together, and they're going to be connected pretty much for the rest of their lives. So I think really before that person throws in the towel, it might be a good idea for him or her to seek the services of a couples therapist and to try to hash that out before they make the decision to just be friends.
Yeah, I think that's really good advice. I think that you get as much help as you can, especially, you know, like the kids are older. I mean, they've accomplished great things in their lives. It's not like something is just like fresh and new. They've really been through a lot of battles and wars together. So it's like it's not to give up would be a great idea, and you can do everything you can to try to maintain the relationship. So,
agree.
I definitely agree with that.
Yeah, some people forget, you know, and they need to be reminded of that.
Right.
They forget why they came together and, you know, why they have been together this long. And so sometimes going into couples therapy can help with that.
That's good stuff. Good stuff. I want to ask you a loaded question, and I think you could take it either way. If it needs any clarification, please let me know. But how important is happiness in a relationship? Like, and the reason I ask that question is because I speak to a lot of people, and isn't it like a little bit of a weird expectation for people to think that they're going to be happy throughout the relationship or for such a long period of time? Is that something that can sabotage a relationship as well?
No, I think that is a good thing. I mean, you want to be happy. I think most of us do. Any that we pursue. Now, whether you'll be happy all the time, that's the question. And I don't think that that's necessarily realistic. I think that there are going to be highs and lows in any relationship. There are highs and lows. So I think you have to be prepared for that. But more than likely, you want to be happy more than you are miserable, so to speak. Want to be?
For sure.
I don't think anybody's shooting for that. I don't think anybody's shooting for miserable. But I think you do want the relationship to be something that is mutually beneficial, and you want to be able to be a part of the couple and be happy. But you also want to be an individual who's happy. And so sometimes for people who may feel like they lost themselves in the relationship, it's learning to do things that will help them to be happier as an individual within the context of that relationship.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you do want to be happy. I mean, I think again, that's what we all want. It's just not realistic to think that's going to be every day of your life.
Correct. And I agree with that. Now, any parting words for the audience? Any last second tips that you can throw at us? You were obviously an amazing guest. And again, thank you for being on the show. I greatly appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
If you have any parting words. No, you know what? I would love to have you back. I'm sure after this conversation, there's going to be a whole bunch of different questions that we can touch on in the future. So I would love to have you back.
Yeah, I would definitely love to come back. If there are questions that come up after this, I'm certainly willing to come back and talk about those questions. And then, again, when the books are published, I hope you'll have me back to talk about those.
Absolutely.
Yeah, in terms of last things to say, to close on, in terms of dating, we talked about red flags. I think pay attention to those red flags. That can save you a lot of heartache. Because people tell you early on who they are. And oftentimes they'll tell you on the first date. I think it's Maya Angelou who said, when people show you who they are for the first time, believe them. And so, again, sometimes we make excuses about people's behavior or we buy their excuses. And if they're telling you I'm a cheater or I have a bad romantic relationship history and I've not learned from that, because sometimes people will tell you that and they have learned from that, and you want to give that person a chance. But they've not learned from that, that's a red flag. Go the other way, okay? Cross the street immediately. Get out of there. It's probably not the best person for you. So watch those signs. Deal with your own stuff, too. So you want to attract the right person. So to do that, you want to make sure that you are the right person. So if there are things that you need to work on in your own background, work on those things, because I think that those things can help you to draw the right person. And be very clear about what you want. You know, I mentioned earlier, write things down or do a vision board, the qualities that you want in a partner. If you're clear about that, I think you have the potential to draw somebody who fits what you want.
Mm-hmm.
And then, give yourself for past mistakes. Heal yourself from the wounds of the past. If there are unresolved family of origin issues, make sure that you're dealing with that stuff. Just be open. I think be open to the process, be open to dating, have fun. Just try to work on self and take some of those dating tips, because I think it will save people a lot of heartache.
Definitely agree. I'm actually going to give you one more question before you leave. Do you think there's any hope for relationships and dating in the future? Do you think we're in trouble, or do you think we can turn this around?
I think we can turn it around. I'm hopeful. I think that, as more people start, taking a deeper look within, whether that's in therapy or not, I am, of course, an advocate for therapy because I think that you get to look at stuff at a deeper level. But whether they're doing that or not, I think as people become more conscious of what's going on with them, we have an opportunity to turn it around. Okay? And if you can turn that around in your relationship when you have kids, and you model that good relationship for them, then they're going to probably get into relationships that are good and healthy too. So I definitely am hopeful. I definitely think that there are some issues, but we can change it. We can, you know, turn it around.
Okay, good. I'm glad you're an optimist like myself. That's great.
Yeah.
I think you're right. I think you're absolutely right. Now, Doc, I want to give you an opportunity to just tell everybody about how to get in contact with you. What's your best way to reach you if they want to follow you on Twitter or Instagram,
okay,
Facebook, what, you know, and give you an opportunity to have a floor.
Okay. So Facebook is Gregory Canillas, C-A-N-I-L-L-A-S. On Twitter, it's Dr. G.J. Canillas, so Dr. G.J. C-A-N-I-L-L-A-S. And on Instagram, it's D-R-C, letter C, and number 9. So definitely follow me. If you have questions, send me questions. You can also reach me at the Chicago School. My email there is gcanillas, C-A-N-I-L-L-A-S, at thechicagoschool.edu. I'm an assistant professor in the clinical PsyD program there, and welcome questions and emails if you would like to do that or any of your listeners would like to do that.
Awesome. All right, Doc, thanks again. I appreciate it. I think your advice helped a lot of people going forward. And again, thank you for being on the show.
Thank you, Omar.
All right, have a good night.
Okay, you too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Was that great or what? Dr. Gregory Canillas, thanks again. Really appreciate him being on the show. And I've learned a lot. You know, I think that the information that he gave is helpful. At the end of the day, I think that we do have to take a step back sometimes and just look at ourselves for guidance. You know, maybe we keep saying that we're meeting the wrong people because of things that we were unconsciously doing. Good information. I think that, you know, sometimes in these situations, you have to take a step back. Definitely give that some thought. I thought that was one of his most prominent points in this whole discussion. And absolutely great call. Again, thank you for listening. I'm Omar Kurmbach, and this is the Wellness Ultimatum Radio. Oh, next week, we're going to have Holly Kenley, author of Another Way. She's going to be by the show discussing her book. She's going to be a great guest as well. And I really, really appreciate everyone listening. Talk to you next week.